Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
Welcome to another edition of Hockey Central at Noon here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Peter Klein in the Sportsnet studios looking at a wonderful shower curtain. Off in his palatial estate is Will Nault. Will, how are you today, sir? So good he is speechless. All right, so we will work on that, or we won't. Who knows? It's a game day for the Flames. We got bigger things to worry about. Flames and the Dallas Stars coming up on your radio today. Between now and then, we have a lot to get to, specifically on this program. Eric Dehatchuk coming up at about 12:30. But before we get to him, we got to chat with Lou.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Comes down to a best of three, and it's going to be all about battle and, you know, winning pucks and winning races and playing inside, all those types of things.
So that was Jeff Ward yesterday commenting on what it's going to take for the Flames in their big game five today against the Dallas Stars. Peter Loubardias, the color voice of the Calgary Flames, joining us now. Lou, it's very cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. We're now down to a best of three. We're going to learn a lot about what the Flames have learned over the next 5 hours or so, I would say.
Well, I love how you phrased it, Peter, because I think already through this portion of the playoffs, we have learned a lot about the Calgary Flames, and frankly, I think they've made some great strides. It's hard not to have felt after game number four of this series that this team was 12 seconds away from taking a stranglehold, but they didn't. They didn't necessarily even give themselves the best opportunity in what was a penalty-filled third period and a back half of the game where they were most certainly due in part to some penalty trouble in a tough position. But would the Calgary Flames have said okay when the resumption of play started to being 2-2 with Dallas after a play-in round win over Winnipeg? Yes. Have we seen a lot of good things? Yes. Do we still have questions about some of their most key performers or expected key performers, Peter, as we talked about yesterday? Absolutely. And isn't this what makes sports great? This is what it's about. This, frankly, is why I get out of bed in the morning for days like this, where you can't wait for it to start. Frankly, last night, could not sleep. Can't wait for the puck to drop because, you know, no matter what happens going forward, I think this is starting to set the foundation for this franchise to go forward. But we still need more from certain individuals who have been down this path before.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's so interesting because I don't know if there's a result that could play out today where I would say, oh man, didn't see that coming. Like the Flames come out and just railroad Dallas or the other way around. It's just, it's so unpredictable. And like you said, that's what gets you fired up about this time of year. It sucks when everything's predictable. It sucks when every year in the NBA you could say, well, it's going to be LeBron against Golden State in the finals. It's fun when, and especially fun for me, when a team like the Raptors upsets the apple cart. And now, today, you have a game where everything is on the table. And like you said, it's going to come down to those key guys. Like, God bless third and fourth lines. They're going to play a role. But it does really feel like whoever's best dudes are the best dudes today are going to have a real shot at winning this.
Well, you know, I mean, you talked about cliches off the top. And I think the difficult part is the Calgary Flames, certainly best line in this series and in the playoffs, have been Lucic, Bennett, and Dubé. And they have been fabulous. It's one of the reasons they start games and start periods. They've been physical. They've been hard to play against. They've produced. They have used their minutes and their assignment beautifully. And they're not alone in that particular category. So there's a few things, Peter, as we get to game number five today. And, you know, one of the reasons that the Flames are in this position is not just because of some of the guys that I've mentioned, but, you know, in the playoffs, goaltending matters. Could Cam Talbot be any better? I don't think so. You know, he stopped 147 of 159 all of a sudden, which wasn't the case in the last series. You know, the Flames are in that 40 shots per game allowed category that they found themselves in a spring ago. And I don't like to go there because this is a different time and this is a different team. And Cam is having an outstanding playoff. Their special teams are clearly winning, even though they gave up for the first time in any playoff game two power play goals in that devastating 5-4 loss 2 days ago. The area that it needs to get better in, and we'll get to that in a second, is 5-on-5 and the production from some of your key people. You don't have a single goal yet, 5-on-5, from Monahan, Gaudreau, or Lindholm. And that's not, again, all on them. The other team plays the game, too. And Rick Bowness has been able to get outstanding mileage out of, in particular, in the matchup game, the Faxalain. But when you have Cam Talbot going as well as he has, you give yourself an opportunity in the playoffs every single night. And Cam was asked yesterday just about how much more difficult the Stars are becoming to deal with as this series goes along.
They probably had a little bit more focus on, you know, just putting pucks at the net from every angle and just getting puck, getting bodies to the net as well, and trying to create those second and third opportunities. And, you know, they're a big, heavy team down low, and their D-men are really good at getting pucks through the net. So I think that's going to be a focus for them. And obviously it's going to have to be a focus for us in the D zone, is to get in those shooting lanes and make sure that we're boxing out and tying up sticks in front. And I'm going to have to do my best to limit those rebound opportunities and limit their second chances, because they feed off those pretty heavily. So they've got a lot of guys that can bang the puck in front, and we can't give them those chances. And that starts with me and my rebound control.
It's crazy that the guy who's made 147 saves, as you mentioned, is saying, well, I need to be better. Like, I don't know if you do, but I see what he is saying. And like he said there, a lot of those goals are coming from those tough areas. Joe Pavelski, I think if you put the combined length of his three goals, it's like 8 feet. Like, it wasn't a whole lot of space between him and the goalie on any of those. And that is something that I think the Flames now need to make an adjustment on. And A, like he said, box out, but also, I think, get some of those opportunities themselves. So it's going to be interesting to see now what adjustments are made going into this game today.
Well, it's all about adjustments from game to game. And we've touched on it briefly. Again, you're not very likely to have Matthew Tkachuk in the lineup. So don't you think, Peter, in some ways, this series really changed in terms of five-on-five play when Matthew goes out, and Tobias has been an absolute sensation in these playoffs. He has more than held up his end of the bargain. He's been one of their best players, including 21-plus minutes of time in game number four. But the fact of the matter is, Matthew Tkachuk was your leading point getter. He's one of your drivers. He's one of your emotional leaders. And that particular line just takes on a very different dynamic, doesn't it, without Matthew? I mean, Matthew is just, he's not a replaceable guy. And you can only do your best to step up and have everybody elevate. And a lot of guys in this lineup have done that, which is why 5-on-5, you talk about Cam Talbot, well, A, boxing out in front of your own net, blocking maybe even more shots than you've done, but, you know, how do you deal with this team? Well, this Dallas team, there's two guys driving the bus right now in a lot of ways, and they're Miro Heiskanen and they're John Klingberg. They lead the Stars in the series with 9 points combined. Miro Haskin, who's starting to look like a combination of Nicklas Lidström and Scott Niedermayer, for my money, has been the best player in this entire series, not named Cam Talbot. He's averaging 28 minutes and 6 seconds a game. Klingberg at 25+. Lindell over 24. And Jamie Oleksiak is over 23. He's 23-45. You know what that means, Peter? They're not going very far down the ladder in terms of Bedun's only, who came into the series in place of the injured Steven Johns. He's not even at 7 minutes a game. And the veteran 35-year-old Andre Sekera is at just under 13. So, A, the Flames are spending a lot of time in their own zone, which is not good, and they are not playing enough hockey, putting more emphasis on hard minutes for that Dallas top four. And that really today, for me, is an absolute focal point. Rick Bowness came out of game one of the series, which without a doubt was the Flames' best entire game from start to finish in the 3-2 victory in game number one. And Bowness came out of that saying, listen, we need to address this. We spent about 5 minutes and 40 seconds in the zone of the Flames. Well, guess what has really started to change from game two on? Now, the Flames have been physical. They've been hard on those defensemen. But those defensemen are elite puck-moving, join the rush. And I'd add another caveat to that. Haskinen, maybe more so. Klingberg walks the line. He's great at getting shots through. He has 5 points in the series. He had 16 shot attempts in the game. 16.
Wow.
So, you know, these guys are really, really driving the bus. And in order to take the keys away from them, you have got to, when you get a chance, and they've done a good job, you've got to finish them. But then you have to look after them in transition. And then even in really studying back, in re-watching a couple periods of game number four in the last couple of days, somewhat like Roman Josi, especially Haskinen. Haven't you found with this defense led by Haskinen, these guys become real coverage problems? Because when I watch them during the game and on video, you'll find these guys below your hash marks, and they're not afraid to do that. And that really can create coverage mistakes. That's one of the great things that Roman Josi does for Nashville. I mean, you just have to be aware of that group, whether in any of the four. So you really, for the Flames, they need to establish ozone time today because it will serve them well in so many ways. And the other thing, too, Peter, about adjustments, in helping move the puck out of your own zone, you heard it off the top. This kind of becomes mono against mono. You need to win races. You have to win puck battles. You have to be engaged. Your wingers, when Dallas is putting on pressure in zone, when you have a chance to get pucks out and make plays, you cannot feed them more offensive zone time by an inability to win wall work. They have got to win some more wall work. And listen, there's lots of guys on the team that are holding up their end. You probably don't need to know where, in a couple of cases, that has not been certain people engaged enough.
Yeah.
And if those are your top offensive people, and I'm sorry, I know that I've been hard on one guy in particular, but you need more engagement from Johnny Gaudreau. You absolutely do.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. And it's funny how these things sort of shift and how just like a bounce or two changes things. But you look at the tying goal with 12 seconds left And not to put it all on one guy, because I think the absolute world of Lindholm and think we had a pretty good stretch of him being the best player on the Flames. But if he's a bit harder on that clearing attempt that Dallas is able to hold in, we're talking about a Flames team that is looking at putting a series away. And it's just those little things that can help elevate your team, especially when the games matter this much. Just a little bit extra here, a little bit extra there, and you can completely shift a series. And some of that... go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm glad you brought that up, not to cut you off, but here's what I think led to Elias Lindholm failing to clear the puck out of the zone. Fatigue. He played 26 minutes. He is out there in what was a penalty-filled third period, and out there a lot in the last 3 minutes, which was really, Peter, a shorthanded situation because Dallas spent the majority of the last 3 minutes 6-on-5. You set yourself up as a team for success. And by virtue of the body of work sometimes and what you ask out of certain people, you also help to set them up for failure. So even when you analyze Elias and Sean, and again, I saw some 5-on-5 progress in game 4. Really, for the first time. For the first time, Johnny Gaudreau, 5-on-5, a better driver, created opportunities, even had a couple of chances in overtime. That's progress. I'm always going to applaud progress. Today, you need more execution. And the less time that group can spend without the puck, that's the misnomer sometimes. If I'm spending 30 of 45 seconds battling my tail off defensively, which is a hard way to play the game, don't you notice how fresh Dallas has been the last little while when you're spending your time in the offensive zone? That doesn't seem to be as tiring.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny how
get out of there. Put in the work, get out of there, have the puck, and now make the other team's life more difficult. And that starts with races, 50-50 battles, be hard on the boards, be smart, make plays. And this team has shown us. I have seen terrific growth in so many areas. They're grittier. They're more resilient. And I love today because I think this series, and I hear other people in the country talking about it. This might be the most interesting series, not just in our market, to others. Like, people are fascinated. 2-5-4s, comebacks, late goals, great goaltending, you know, some outstanding individual performances. This is a heck of a series. It really is. Mm-hmm. It's hard to feel that way sometimes if you're invested and right in the middle of it. Peter, as today plays out, the team and players that can embrace days like today, they win. And I didn't get there because my stupid phone shut off yesterday, but that's the difference. And that's why I assess days like today so close. And because, make no mistake, it is really hard to be good and make a difference in these kind of games with so much on the line and every shift, every play matters, which is what makes it so special, but so difficult.
You mentioned assessing players in these types of games, and as weird as it is, and as much of a reminder sometimes as we need to have, because of injuries and just lack of team success, we haven't had a lot of these moments to judge Mark Giordano off of. And I think today that this might be the biggest game of his career going up against the Dallas Stars. And I'm very interested to see what more does he have to give? Because you know you're going to get basically all he has, but how much more can we get from the captain today of the Calgary Flames?
Well, listen, I've said it a million times, Mark's work, his preparation is elite. And after playing 893 regular season games and being one of the greatest individual stories I've ever witnessed, a lot of it with my own two eyes. He's going to go down in Flames history as somebody that's really special. But the one thing that he has yet to truly make a large, large impact in is in the playoffs. This is the biggest game of his career today. He's never been this deep. He's never played this many playoff games in one playoff year. This is what he wants. There's no doubt his work, what the Calgary Flames mean to him. But the one thing about Mark that I've always wondered sometimes about the rest of the group is, where's the rub off in terms of seeing that great example? And also, in the playoffs, your ability to execute when it's really, really difficult for players, including somebody like Johnny Gaudreau. Not because they're not trying, Peter. Not because they don't want it to be better. It's difficult. But these are the days that you get judged on in a lot of ways. And yet for Mark, I don't think it's the same as others, because yes, he won a Norris Trophy, but you know, Mark is about the work. You know, Mark has done so much with what he has. I'd make an argument he has taken his skill set and I think of him as a massive, in many ways, overachiever. But this is a chance for him today. If he's the best defenseman in this game, and that's challenging with the two guys we've already talked about, but if he is at his absolute best today, and I liked his game by and large in game four, so I think that's trending in a better way, this team has a better chance to be successful too.
Just so many different storylines to watch as we head toward the 3:30 puck drop. Lou, I can't wait to listen to your call on it today. I'm sure you're rather excited about getting the call today. So we will. I'm going to suggest when we talk tomorrow, we're going to have a couple things to talk about.
We won't be shy on it, my friend. We won't be shy. Have a great afternoon. I got to keep some energy for 2:30.
All right. I think you'll be able to find some. Lou, always fun, man. Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Flames insider Peter Loubardias, brought to you by the Gemini Group. Imagine your life, your style. Your home renovation should be a reflection of you. Give your home the Gemini difference. Visit GeminiGroup.ca.
Hockey Central at noon continues. Peter Klein, Logan Gordon on the ones and twos today. Logo, it doesn't, like Lou said, it doesn't get a whole lot better than days like today. Like, this is, we have no idea how this is going to go from a watching and breaking down hockey standpoint. This is going to be a lot of fun. A lot of nerves, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun today.
Yeah, this is kind of what makes playoff hockey as great as it is. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm sure the Vegas fans love that they're, you know, controlling the series pretty much against Chicago. But, I mean, this is really the best type of hockey, I'd say. And it's got an excitement to it. I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm sure from a Flames fan perspective, they'd love to be having these conversations around a conference finals instead of a conference a quarterfinals. But here we are again. 3:30 is your start. 2:30 is Flames warm up. We will have rather extensive pregame coverage between now and then. Do want to remind you guys that you can tune into Hockey Central. That's this show every Friday to hear the Bacardi Spicy Moment of the Week. Could be a big hit, big goal, or maybe someone's got a big mouth. Who knows? The spiciest moment will also be posted on our Sportsnet 960 Facebook and Twitter pages. In case you missed it, look for the hashtag #ThatsSpice. It takes a real captain to make a bold choice. Made with aged rum for smoothness and blended with natural spices, try Bacardi Spiced for your next home game. We shall break when we come back. Eric DeHatchuk with more on the Flames and the Stars and the rest of the goings-on in the National Hockey League as we continue here on Hockey Central at noon. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Well, as Logan had in the update, some incredibly sad news from the hockey world just coming down. Eric Hawerchuk tweeting out a couple minutes ago, after an incredibly brave and difficult battle with cancer, our dad has passed away. My family is so proud of him and the way he fought. So Dale Hawerchuk passing away today after, as mentioned in the tweet, a long battle with cancer. The age of 57 years old. We bring in Eric the Hatchick now. Eric, certainly not the circumstances we wanted to be starting today with. But Dale Hawerchuk has passed away. An incredible career, and it seems from all accounts an incredible man. Just a couple thoughts on Dale Hawerchuk.
Yeah, well, I actually knew Dale pretty well because when he was elected in the Hockey Hall of Fame in 2001 as a player, that was the year that I got in the writers category. So we spent a lot of that weekend together. But obviously, you know, with him having most of the really important part of his career with the Winnipeg Jets in the old Smythe Division days, we'd see the Jets 8 times a year and you know, got to know him very well. And you're 100% right. Like, just a really, really good person. Someone that you could, you know, call up and just, you know, have a hockey conversation and have a life conversation. Great values, really good family man, loved the game of hockey. Was, I think, like, really, really underrated. I mean, the problem with being a center in the era in which he played is that was also the time of Wayne Gretzky, and it was the time of Mark Messier, and then, you know, fairly soon afterwards, Mario Lemieux came into the league, too. So, you know, so the people like Dale Hawerchuk, like Ron Francis, even like Steve Yzerman, you know, it's hard to make an all-star team when Wayne Gretzky is scoring 200 points a year. And I think what complicated matters too for Winnipeg in that time was that Edmonton was in that dynasty period where they were sensational. Calgary was improving and getting a lot better. And I've said this multiple times. I thought that the three of the five best teams in the NHL for a long period of time were all in the same division. It was Edmonton, Calgary, and Winnipeg. I put Edmonton first, Calgary third, Winnipeg fifth. But Winnipeg, the way the playoff format was, we're constantly running into one of those teams in the first round. And once in a while, you know, they never beat Edmonton, but they did take up Calgary a couple of times. But it was a really long, challenging path, and one that they were never able to forge. And I think that was always the one thing that sort of stuck with Dale, was that, you know, that probably the greater hockey world didn't have an appreciation for how good that team was and how well they played at home. You know, everybody talks about the portrait of the Queen in that arena. You know, the ice was as good in Winnipeg as it was in Edmonton all those years when people were raving about the ice at Northlands. They were a skating team. They were a hard team to play against. They were fun to watch. You know, they were fun to watch. And he was just an extremely skilled guy, more playmaker than scorer, but could do all those things. And, you know, one of the real legends of the game. And as you say, you know, like, you know, 57, it's just, you know, it's just too young. So,
yeah, it's heartbreaking news today. You look at some of the numbers, and his last year in junior, 183 points in 72 games. I don't know if I've seen many 2 point per game guys. Like, that's unbelievable. Some of the, and just on throughout the NHL, 50 goal scorer, scored 40 basically every year he was in Winnipeg. Just an incredible career, as you mentioned.
Yeah. And you know, and the thing is, like, he was one of those really kind of complete players. And I think, you know, like, you know, when I think about, you know, Jerome McGinley's career, you know, he's going in the Hall of Fame this year. And when he was reflecting back on it, you know, he had a lot of success in the NHL too, never won a championship. And players like that, I think, took solace from their performance internationally. And so, you know, and, you know, generation, you know, people of a certain age, my age, you know, remember that when Canada won the Canada Cup in 1987, you know, that was Dale Hawerchuk there, you know, taking the draw, you know, that led to the winning goal in that deciding game. And I think a lot of people believe that series might have been, you know, the greatest series, you know, internationally that's ever been, because the Russians were so good there, and, you know, 3-6-5 games. And, like, he was a critical, important piece of maybe one of the, you know, the best Canadian teams ever put together in best-on-best competition. So I think a lot, you know, in Winnipeg, I mean, he was just an icon. So what Jerome McGinley, what Lanny McDonald is to Calgary, that's Dale Hawerchuk to Winnipeg. He's just associated with the team. And then, of course, you know, when they drafted Mark Scheifele, and then that was right at the time when the franchise was moving from Atlanta to Winnipeg, their first ever pick, Mark Scheifele, Barry Colts, you know, Central Scouting had him lower than that. A lot of people, you know, looked and said, Mark Scheifele, really? And it was, you know, and then you dug a little bit deeper in the story, and it was because, well, you know, Dale Hawerchuk is his coach, and they did their due diligence, and Hawerchuk said, this guy is going to be special. And, you know, it's worth investing even, you know, I think the seventh overall pick in him, even though most people around the league wondered about that. And it's proven to be 100% true. And if you watch the way Scheifele plays, you know, there's echoes of Dale Hawerchuk in the way that he carries him and carries himself. And I think that, you know, the Scheifele will be somebody that I think we want to hear from today about the influences that Dale had on his life. But lots of people that went through that that junior organization that went on to have NHL careers will I think pay respect to the influence that Dale had. Like I said, just a really good person, you know. And at the end of the day, that's the thing that matters most to me. Like, you know, lots of great hockey players, the ones that are that and carry themselves with class and dignity and professionalism, friendship. You know, those are the things that matter in life, right? And when life comes to an end, those are the things I think that the people around him will remember.
And you can certainly see already on social media the outpouring of condolences and respect. And we've been seeing that for a while with the Hawerchuk Strong campaign that's been going on. An incredible amount of respect for Dale Hawerchuk in the hockey world. Again, the news coming down a few moments ago, Dale Hawerchuk passing away at the age of 57. Obviously, no easy transitions out of this one, but the Calgary Flames are in action today, taking on the Dallas Stars. It is Game 5 of the Western Conference quarterfinal. I guess this one, whenever you ask anyone not in Calgary or Dallas, hey, what series outside of whatever market you're in do you have your eye on? Everyone seems to be bringing up this one. What has been your impression of Calgary-Dallas now that we have four games of a sample size?
Well, you know, that's actually a really good question, because I do think that, you know, like there's a little bit more of a rumble about, you know, this series than you might have thought going in. And I think it's because it's been so competitive, and you know, certainly, you know, the way Dallas took two of those games, you know, in the last minute is very dramatic, and drama is always one of the things that people who don't have a rooting interest, you know, really enjoy in the sport. You know, it's a little bit complicated, because if we had been talking, let's say a month ago, we're talking about the NHL season resuming, and at some point we're projecting that Dallas is going to play Calgary in the playoffs. Well, the discussion we'd be having right now is Ben Bishop versus David Rittich, you know, and can Rittich, you know, raise the level of his game, because, you know, Bishop is a guy that, you know, perennially is in the conversation for the Vezina, and, you know, great goaltender, and when he's on his game, handles the puck so well. And instead we're having the discussion about Cam Talbot, you know, and Anton Hudobin. So, you know, Hudobin's been like real solid for them. Talbot's been sensational for Calgary. And that's, I think, one of the things that makes sports so interesting, especially this sport in a bubble. I mean, it's a bit confounding for someone like myself who kind of has to analyze and try to, you know, find trends, because there's so much that's unpredictable about this. A lot of it has to do with the way injuries are reported. You know, a good example is the Tarasenko. So now, you know, his shoulder's bothering him. He's left the bubble. He's gone back to St. Louis. They're going to examine him, you know, out for this round. Who knows what's happening going forward? So, you know, you went into the playoffs thinking that Tarasenko was healed. He was supposed to play regular season games if the league hadn't paused because of COVID. So there's a level of mystery that doesn't normally happen at this time of year, and so I think that's what's made a lot of series compelling. And then this one, you know, as I say, the goaltending is not the matchup that you would have expected. The fact that the third line in Calgary has been by far the best line, you know, that's probably unexpected. You know, all those people that were being critical of Milan Lucic, you know, I'm looking for them on social media right now. I'm looking to see, where are all those Lucic haters? I don't see them as much, you know. And all those people that were wondering about, you know, which version of Sam Bennett we'd get, they've got their answers, right? So that's what's made it fun. I mean, those guys have been really good. And I think that, you know, the fact that Matthew Tkachuk is out, and, you know, who knows, you know, when he might be available, the fact that they're still being real competitive without his contribution and his energy, I think is saying something too. So yeah, it's been a fun series to watch. And don't ask me for a prediction, because I have no idea how this is going to unfold. I was speaking to a couple of coaches actually the last 24 to 36 hours about losing a game the way Calgary did on a kind of a broken play. And, you know, Brody breaks his stick and then Dubé can't get in the shooting lane. And should he have changed? And, you know, should he not have changed? And why hasn't, you know, analytics caught up with a solution for that? Because that's the one part of the game that doesn't seem to have a definitive answer. You know, should a guy go off and get a stick? It's only a few seconds away. You know, or does he, you know, does it turn into a fire drill, which it did, and then it winds up as a winning goal, and now you're thinking, well, now what? You know, and one of the coaches that I spoke to said the problem with a loss like that is those tend to linger. It's just hard to put those, because you're so close, and then you get a bad break, and it just, you know, you have to sort of worry them down to their nub and then put them in the path and move on to the next thing. So I'm very interested to see what the start looks like and what the Flames are like psychologically in the first 10 minutes. And if they have been able to put the disappointing way that game ended, the late goal in regulation, and then the weirdness of the overtime winner. And saying all that, even though the run of play went Dallas's way, we all know in the NHL playoffs, that means nothing. Somebody's going to score, and it's not always the team that has all the territorial advantage. So kind of fun to watch. And you know, the unpredictability of professional sport is certainly on display right now in this postseason.
Yeah, I said it with Lou in the first segment. I don't know if there's any result that could come down today that I would go, oh, I didn't see that coming, because it just feels like everything's on the table today.
Exactly. Well, and that's the way it's been. You know, like at the start of this thing, I thought to myself, you know, I think the good teams are gonna surprise, and there isn't gonna be a lot of upsets, and that, you know, the Colorados and the Vegases, you know, they'll sort of drift through these, you know, preliminary rounds, but when it comes time to play, you know, they'll play, and I think that has been true in the case of Colorado and Vegas. But, you know, St. Louis, it was like I was mystified at where they were. But if you had told me that, you know, that Jake Allen would be riding to the rescue because they hadn't won a game since the bubble started, and they needed to do something to shift the momentum, that it would be him that would be coming in to replace, you know, Jordan Binnington, who was such a critical part of the win last year, the turnaround last year, and the fact that they were the top regular season team in the West this year. Like, that's like, huh, really? And yet there was a part of me that I got to thinking about the problems that Jake Allen has had at different times in his career. And I'll ask you the question. Everyone thinks that the lack of fans is a negative because, you know, you gain energy from the fans. But sometimes if the fans are critical of your performance, the lack of fans might help. And in the case of a guy like Jake Allen, who, you know, the fans in St. Louis weren't always very kind to him, does playing, you know, essentially in a neutral site where you're not worried about, you know, people, but where you can just go out and play, does that put you in a better mind frame and allow you to play the way he has? Because he's got them back on track. He's got them back in the series. However it goes from here on in, his contributions to, you know, to winning, helping them win these two games and getting even in the series cannot be understated. And I think that it might have something to do with the fact that, you know, he's somebody that probably is being helped by the fact that there's nobody around. He's just playing hockey, and that's been a good thing for him.
Yeah, there isn't that nervous energy if a bad one squeaks through or anything like that in a building. I think that's a great point, actually. I would tend to subscribe to that as well. Do want to kind of bookend this with Dale Hawerchuk stuff. As we mentioned, the Winnipeg Jets and Buffalo Sabres legend passing away earlier today at the age of 57. You shared a couple good anecdotes, but I guess just any more stories that come to mind when you hear the name Dale Hawerchuk?
Well, you know, I mean, we were covering the whole league in those days, and I do remember, when he signed that contract. So, you know, I mean, Winnipeg was fairly new into the NHL. It was a couple of years after they merged with the WHA, and they weren't a very good team. And that, when you were not a very good team in those days, you were guaranteed the first overall pick. So they drafted Hawerchuk, and he was supposed to be the savior of the franchise. And I think John Ferguson was running the team at the time, and they had, you know, a Brinks truck, you know, driving down the street and signing the contract at Portage in Maine and making a big deal about it. And I think that, you know, that was partly because, you know, of the market there. You know, they were trying to establish themselves as major league in every way, including, you know, that they're prepared to pay you know, the money that it will take to sign these future superstars. And you know, the history of guys that have as much hype as you know, Dale did is that, you know, sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. You know, there have been players drafted in that era, you know, very high up who never really had, you know, an NHL career. You know, Doug Smith went to Los Angeles Kings second overall, and, you know, players chosen behind him were in the Hall of Fame. So a lot of pressure on him as a young player. And yet it never seemed to phase. Won the Rookie of the Year his first year. And as you've alluded to already, you know, when you recite the statistics, he was just like a consistent year after year great player in the National Hockey League. And so, you know, sometimes that's harder to do than it looks, to meet the very, very high expectations that are put on you. And Dale was that guy. He was that guy on the ice, and he was that guy off the ice.
Excellent perspective, Eric. Always enjoy chatting with you again. Wish it was under happier circumstances. But thank you for the stories today, and we'll hopefully have some happier things to chat about on Thursday.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. That is Eric DeHatchuk joining us today on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, now open for limited dine-in service with all safety precautions in place. Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar, the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs since 1975 at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Went a little long with Duha there, but some great stuff there on Dale Hawerchuk again, the NHL legend passing away today at the age of 57. We shall break and put a bow on Hockey Central at noon next here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hockey Central at noon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Flames game day, although the hockey world, their attention a bit divided right now, as Dale Hawerchuk has passed away at the age of 57, the Hockey Hall of Famer, with a long, hard battle with cancer. Again, 57 years old. Logo, certainly before our time here watching hockey, but a legend that we would hear about quite a bit. You look at the numbers. Again, that last year in the queue, 81 goals, 102 assists for 183 points. That is just, that doesn't even seem real, but truly one of the all-time greats, leaving us today at the age of 57.
Yeah, and certainly someone that holds a special connection to Winnipeg and that franchise. And I think one of the players that I think, you know, sometimes because of the era he was in and some of the players that, you know, played on other teams, he gets forgotten about sometimes, not forgotten about, but, you know, maybe not thought of as much, but certainly a special talented player that means a lot to a lot of people in this country. And 57, just a very young age. And we knew he had gone through these battles with cancer and fought very hard for it. And just unfortunately wasn't able to do it again, but someone that I think will be looked on with a lot of reverence in the game of hockey going forward. And, you know, someone who leaves a pretty special legacy behind.
Yeah. No, very well said. And Eric touched on it earlier today. You look at that era where the Jets, Oilers, and Flames are all just playing out of their minds. Like that is really a golden age for hockey. That's pretty incredible stuff. You look at the numbers for Hawerchuk, career high 53 goals in the 84-85 season. He had 77 assists, 130 points in that 84-85 season. Ends up with 518 career goals, 1,400 career points, does get into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Traded a couple times, couple noteworthy deals. He was traded from Winnipeg with future considerations and a first-round pick in 1990 that ends up being Brad May, who I think a lot of people would take his NHL career, for a package that included Phil Housley, who was pretty important to the Buffalo Sabres and later for a bit the Calgary Flames, and a round one pick that ends up being Keith Tkachuk. And then one more time, Dale Hawerchuk traded for Craig McTavish. So some noteworthy names all over the Hockey DB page. Most recently, his hockey impact came in coaching as the head coach of the Barrie Colts from the 2010-2011 season all the way through 2018-2019. As mentioned before, Mark Scheifele in there and Calgary Flames connection. Those would be the teams that Andrew Mangiapane and Rasmus Anderson played on. So We are at a great time hockey-wise with the Stanley Cup playoffs going on, but we'll be watching it all with a heavy heart today as Dale Hawerchuk has passed away at the age of 57. We will break when we come back. A very abbreviated big show today on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. We got your roundtable, and we got CJ coming up all before 2:30 when it's Flames warm-up, getting us set for the Flames and the Dallas Stars tonight here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.